The Kingdom of Ai, Chapter 6, The City of Grumbleton. These people are grumblers and complainers, living only to satisfy their desires. Jude Chapter 1, Verse 16a. Andrew the Encourager stood looking down the road in the direction that the seekers would soon travel. Now, as you continue your journey, the next city you will come to is called Grumbleton. It is important that you are wise and cautious as you pass by that city. The entire population of Grumbleton is infected with an extremely contagious virus, which is passed through the ear canal into the brain. It impacts the speech of the infected person in such a way that they cannot carry on a conversation without having an overwhelming compulsion to complain, murmur, grumble, or in some way express annoyance or unhappiness of some variety. "What on earth are they all complaining about?" Mary asked, with a puzzled look on her face. Andrew smiled slightly and said, "If you must know, the citizens of Grumbleton complain about their jobs, their supervisors, the government, their neighbors, their financial condition, their spouses, their own children, their in-laws, the weather, and their personal aches and pains. There is no subject that the Grumbletonians leave untouched by their complaints." "That sounds most disagreeable," said David, after listening to Andrew's description. "Indeed," added Mary, "that is not a place I would ever want to live." Stephen looked concerned. Then he asked, "As long as we stay out of that city, we should not be in danger of being infected by this virus. Is that correct?" "Not exactly," replied Andrew. "It only requires casual contact with an infected person for the contagion to be spread. The potent viral strain of negativity carried by the Grumbletonians has often infected people outside their own city limits, most commonly through interactions with citizens of Grumbleton who are found protesting outside the city gates. Those passing by on the road easily get caught up listening to and discussing the complaints the Grumbletonians are shouting about. Once infected, a person is compelled to move to Grumbleton, even if it was never their intention." Looking gravely at the group and then back at Andrew, Stephen said, "We will have to be far more careful than we were when we stayed in the city of Flattery. We listened to their smooth words and were almost carried away by them. It sounds like we will have to literally cover our ears and block out the words being spoken by the Grumbletonians lest we all become infected by their virus." "That is correct," Andrew confirmed. "The key to avoiding infection by the Grumbleton virus is to refuse to listen to the grumbling and complaining, no matter how reasonable it sounds. I will explain how it infects people. If a visitor to Grumbleton, or even a passerby, makes any indication of agreement with the complaints they express or happen to make mention of a person or situation which caused some measure of discontent, citizens of Grumbleton will gather closely around, circling the visitor like vultures eyeing a potential meal. Then they will flatter the visitor with words that validate his right to express his grievances, in the hope that the visitor will join their ranks and take up residence in Grumbleton. By that point, the infection has been passed on. It happens quickly, and before they know it, the visitor is ushered into Grumbleton, made an honorary citizen, and rarely escapes. "Oh dear," Mary exclaimed, "that sounds awful. Maybe we should take another road so we don't even have to pass by that city." "Yes, I agree," Benny Ray and the usually quiet Thomas all chimed in. "There is no other road to the City of Seekers," Andrew explained. "Every seeker must pass by the City of Grumbleton and successfully avoid its snare. Just be wise and remember this counsel I am giving you. Now, it is time for you to go." "Well, let's get on with it," Thomas muttered as the group picked up their bags. The seven began walking down the road, glancing back at Andrew, who remained fixed in the place they first saw him when they had fled out of the gates of the City of Flattery. Stephen stopped in the road and turned back to address Andrew. "Would you consider accompanying us on this part of the journey?" he asked weakly, knowing the answer even as he was asking the question. Andrew smiled. "You must pass this test on your own. Just remember my counsel and read from the king's book." The group walked for more than 3 hours, but the time flew by as they discussed all that they had learned since they started their journey. Timothy suggested they take a break to rest, drink some water, and to listen to words from the king's book as Andrew had instructed them. The group agreed and headed off the road to some trees which would provide some refreshing shade. As they sat down under the shade of the trees, Timothy drew the old leather-bound book which Andrew the Encourager had entrusted to his care. As the group began taking sips of water, Timothy began to speak. "I want to be faithful to Andrew's exhortation about reading daily from the King's book. Please forgive me for not doing so. I promise to pursue this and invite you to remind me if I seem to forget. Once when I was glancing through the book, I saw two passages that talked about grumbling. So I think it's appropriate that I read those right now since we are approaching the city of Grumbleton. The first one I found is in a section of the book called The Letter of Paul to the Philippians. This man Paul seems to be a leader giving counsel to others who are trying to follow the king and his son. He wrote these words, "Do all you have to do without grumbling or arguing, so that you may be God's children, blameless, sincere, and wholesome, living in a warped and diseased world and shining like lights in a dark place, for you hold in your hands the very word of life." Timothy stopped reading there and then turned to the group. "What do you think he meant by those words?" "Can you read it again?" asked Mary. "Yes, of course," Timothy replied. He read the words more slowly the second time, and everyone in the group looked thoughtfully at him as he spoke. "It seems to be saying that even though the whole world is messed up, or warped, as it said, those people who can live their lives without grumbling will be like lights in comparison to the darkness around them," David said. "Yes," Stephen agreed. "It seems amazing to me. They will be considered blameless in God's eyes." "For the king to say that in his book must mean he really hates grumbling and complaining," Benny commented. "You are right about that. Wait until you hear this other passage I found." "Before you read that next passage, can you read that last sentence again? There's something important there," said Stephen. Timothy reread the very last sentence in the passage, "For you hold in your hands the very word of life." "Is this a reference to the king's book?" Stephen asked aloud. "If so, it's more precious than we even realized. We must consider it a treasure and guard it with our lives." The seekers nodded soberly and murmurs of yes rippled through the group. Timothy turned to the other passage he had found. "This will confirm to you that the king hates complaining. It is from the early part of the king's book in a section called Numbers 11. The group listened attentively as Timothy began to read. "One day the Israelites started complaining about their troubles. The Lord heard them and became so angry that he destroyed the outer edges of their camp with fire. When the people begged Moses to help, he prayed and the fire went out. They named the place Burning because in his anger, the Lord had set their camp on fire." "He is very serious about this complaining business," said Mary. "It seems so," said Thomas, with his brows furrowed. "I just keep thinking how natural it is for all of us to complain and grumble when things aren't going well. But I certainly don't want to make the king angry." "Can you imagine a whole city of people who are dedicated to grumbling and complaining night and day? Surely that is a place that the king would not be pleased with. So we need to avoid the trap of this city of Grumbleton. Look, you can see the wall of the city from here. We are only a short distance away. We must be on our guard as we pass by it," Stephen exhorted them. "Let's get on our way." The group stood up, grabbed their bags, and were about to start down the road again when they heard a voice behind them. "Though the city and its people will seem quite harmless, it truly is a dangerous place because a person can be so easily lured into the trap of grumbling. Beware of the sound of their voices, as their words will seem so reasonable to your mind that you will feel obligated to agree with them. The group turned to see Andrew the Encourager standing a few steps behind them. "Andrew," Stephen exclaimed, "I'm so glad you've returned." "I returned to tell you that it is good that you have read the King's Book and found what is written there about this issue of grumbling," Andrew answered. "Andrew," Ray interjected with a perplexed look on his face, "I just can't understand how grumbling can be such a big danger to our journey to the City of Secrets. Seekers." Andrew looked at him with piercing eyes. "Anything that stops you from pursuing the King and his kingdom is a danger to your life. In the King's Book, it is written, 'Catch the foxes, the little foxes, that spoil and ruin the vineyards.' It means that even a small thing that doesn't look dangerous can be a destroyer to you. If you don't take this warning seriously, you will end up a captive in the City of Grumbleton, and your journey to the Kingdom of I Am will be over." "Okay, now I understand what you're saying. Thank you for explaining it so clearly," said Ray. "I will be on guard." Andrew nodded. "Now, be on your way and remember my warning," he said with a wave as he turned and walked away. The group continued their journey down the road toward the city whose walls loomed before them. As they drew closer, they began to hear the voices of a multitude chanting something they could not quite discern. They saw a man walking down the road toward them. Stephen called out to him, "Hello, friend. Are you familiar with the city just ahead of us?" The man stopped to answer. "I am familiar with Grumbleton by reputation only. I have never stepped inside those city gates. I advise you to steer clear of the place as well, because I know it has swallowed up many a passerby." "What exactly do you know about the city?" Stephen inquired. "I know that protests and marches are commonplace in that city. In fact, you can hear one going on right now outside the city gates. I also know that its citizens teach their children to vocalize their dissatisfaction with any and every circumstance they face from an early age, which makes them the most unpleasant children you will ever meet. Another well-known fact is that Grumbletonians excel at using the social media to share their disgruntled point of view. They never offer solutions to any problem, but relish with delight the opportunity to point out the perceived flaws and failures of others. And frankly, their town motto reveals their attitude perfectly. You can read it on the sign welcoming you to their city." "What is the town motto?" Benny asked. The man looked at him impatiently and said, "Their town motto is, 'I have every right to grumble and complain. In fact, it is my birthright.'" "Oh, I see," Benny replied. The group glanced at each other with wide eyes. "How do you know so much about the place if you've never visited it?" Timothy asked. "I have lived in the nearby town of Productivity all of my life. Some children from Grumbleton have come to school in our town, and we have learned much about the place from them. I have avoided visiting that city because one of the things we learned as children growing up in Productivity is that grumbling is never productive. So we avoid listening to even a word of it. I highly recommend you do the same. Now, I cannot waste another minute. I must be on my way," he said. With a quick wave of his hand toward the group of seekers, he turned and began walking briskly down the road. The group stared after him, pondering all that he had said. "Well," said Stephen, "there is one person who has managed to avoid being snared by the Grumbleton virus, and the key seems to be found in not listening to the grumbling and complaining of its citizens. This agrees with what Andrew told us. So since we know that there are Grumbletonians protesting outside the city gates right now, we will have to pass by as quickly as possible and cover our ears so we are not influenced by their words. Are we ready?" "Ready," the group replied in unison. "Let's go," Timothy encouraged. It took less than 10 minutes before they found themselves approaching the city gates on the left side of the road. A huge sign announced, "You have arrived. Welcome to Grumbleton." Just as the man from Productivity had told them, the town motto was printed in bold letters. "I have every right to grumble and complain. In fact, it is my birthright." The noise of the protesters, who were marching in a circle in front of the gate, was raucous and dissonant sounding. The seekers quickly tucked their bags under their arms and clasped their hands over their ears to block out the words that were being spewed from the leader's megaphone. With a nod of his head toward the road, Stephen encouraged the group to begin walking quickly past the gates. They were making good progress when suddenly Thomas dropped one of his bags and had to reach down to grab it from the ground. When he did so, one of the protesters ran to him in a feigned effort to help him. Thomas said a quick thanks, grabbed his bag from the man's hand, but a group of protesters surrounded him and began quickly talking to him about their protests and the righteousness of their cause. Thomas, in an effort to be polite, listened for a moment. He was just about to nod his head in courteous agreement when Timothy and Stephen dashed into the fray. They grabbed Thomas and dragged him away from the group and half carried him down the road at top speed. The rest of the seekers, seeing what had happened, began running down the road alongside of them. They ran without stopping for nearly 10 minutes until the words shouted by the protesters had become indistinct. Breathing heavily and fatigued from both the running and all the excitement, the group stumbled to a stop. They threw themselves down on a wide swath of green grass by the side of the road. No one spoke for a while as they all stretched out on the soft grass and tried to catch their breath. Thomas spoke first. Andrew was right. The words of the Grumbletonians sounded so reasonable, and the cause they supported seemed so righteous when I listened to their arguments. I was so close to nodding in agreement when Timothy and Stephen grabbed me. Looking from Stephen to Timothy and back again, Thomas added a heartfelt thank you. With emotion welling up in his throat so that he could barely speak, he managed to whisper, "I realize that I would have been trapped in that city if you had not intervened." Everyone was quiet for a few moments, considering the gravity of the situation that they had just escaped. Benny spoke next. "I realized two things from this experience. The first one is how incredibly accurate all of Andrew's warnings have been. And secondly," he hesitated as he spoke. "And secondly," Stephen prompted him, wanting to hear him finish his sentence. "And secondly, I now see how much we need to watch out for each other." In the middle of all that commotion, Thomas didn't realize he was about to be captured. Yet Timothy and Stephen did recognize the danger he was in at that very moment. Because they were so vigilant and intervened to help, we didn't lose Thomas to the clutches of the Grumbletonians. "I am really thankful that we are all traveling together. I don't think we would make it on our own." Timothy said, "You are right. We need to help each other. And I found something in the King's book about that very subject. Let me read it to you." He flipped through the pages of the leather-covered book he had drawn out of his bag. "Yes, here it is. Those of us who are strong and able in the faith need to step in and lend a hand to those who falter. And not just do what is most convenient for us. Strength is for service, not status. Each one of us needs to look after the good of the people around us, asking ourselves, how can I help?" Before anyone could respond to the words that Timothy read to them, a voice boomed from behind them. They bolted upright at the sound. "You have discovered an important truth from the King's book," the voice declared. The group turned to see Andrew the Encourager standing there. There was a hint of a smile on his lips. His face and his clothes looked strangely different. They seemed to be glowing. In the kingdom of I, people are so self-absorbed that being concerned about others is not even a consideration. They pursue self-interest above everything else. But in the kingdom of I Am, people are given the heart of the King, and his heart is to put the interests of others ahead of himself. In his book, it is also written, "Abandon every display of selfishness. Possess a greater concern for what matters to others instead of your own interests. I am pleased that you are learning what is precious to the heart of the King." The little group listened attentively to Andrew's words. There was a reverent silence for the words of the King that he had shared with them. After a few moments, Ray broke the quiet reverie with a question. "Andrew, why is it that your face and your clothes seem to be glowing?" Andrew's face broke into a wide grin and he chuckled. "Everyone that enters the King's presence always leaves changed. I had been called to his throne room to give a report on your progress toward the City of Seekers. I have just come from there now to meet with you. That is why my face and clothing are still carrying the glow of the light of his presence." Mary's eyes widened in astonishment as she blurted out, "Do you mean to tell us that the king knows about our journey, and he cares enough to ask about our little group's progress?" Andrew smiled sweetly at Mary as he replied, "The king is intimately acquainted with the life journey of every single person in the kingdom of Ai, and he longs to see every individual choose to become a seeker of his kingdom. So to answer your question directly, yes, the king knows your name, and he knows that you are traveling toward the City of Seekers and toward the kingdom of I Am. He assigned me to help you along the way, and he cares very much about your progress." Tears coursed down Mary's cheeks as she spoke barely above a whisper. "He knows my name? He cares about my progress? He's waiting for me?" "Yes, Mary, the king is waiting for you," Andrew said gently.